Blog Talk Radio.
Introducing Renee Wiggins, your certified health and wellness coach, author, and host of Being Fabulously Fit for God's Kingdom Blog Talk Radio. Renee provides a roadmap to staying healthy and fit spiritually and physically. She believes God gave us a gift, our temple, and it's ours to nourish, feed, and honor. Be sure to also catch her on ResultsByRenee.com. That's ResultsByRenee.com. And now, here is Renee.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Renee Wiggins of Being Fabulously Fit in God's Kingdom, where we engage you to become spiritually, mental, and physical fit. Well, this is Thursdays, and Thursdays is a part two. This show is called Transformation, Give Up the Struggle, where I have authors that come on and share their stories, their experiences to help us grow mentally, physically, and spiritually. But before we go to our commercial, I want to ask you, do you know what alcoholism is? Alcoholism is a chronic and often progressive disease that includes problems controlling your drinking, being preoccupied with alcohol, continuing to use alcohol even when it causes problems, having to drink more to get the same effect. So are you an alcoholic? Do you know someone who's an alcoholic? An alcoholic is a man or woman who suffers from alcoholism. They have a distinct physical desire to consume alcohol beyond their capacity to control it, regardless of all the rules of common sense. Is that you? Does alcohol only affect the individual, or does it affect the whole family? Does that person who is an alcoholic take everyone in the community with them, or just themselves? If you have a parent or two parents that are alcoholics, why does one child suffer and the other one does not? Can there be a happy journey to also with a happy ending? Or does this alcoholic hide his addiction, is that you, or push it on the rug? Well, we will have the answers to those questions from Albera Sequeira, author and motivational speaker on alcohol and drug abuse. She is also the producer, director, and co-host to the MBTV 95 cable TV station of the New Bedford, Massachusetts. Let's go to the commercial and think about it. Are you an alcoholic?
Renee Wiggins is a Christian life coach and host of Transformation Give Up the Struggle, where she helps to equip and empower you from the inside out so you can share your story in order that others may grow physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Let's welcome Alberta. Are you there, Alberta?
Yes, I am, Renee. How are you?
Fine, finding you, and I want to thank you for coming on, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. I'm still got to get used to pronouncing names, but thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it, because when I saw your book titles, I said it just really pierced through my soul, because I never thought of that person who's an alcoholic takes the whole family onto a journey. But before dwell even more into that, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I became an author and a speaker with absolutely no planning on it. What happened is it became really came from being a tragedy. It's an awful way to say that. We authors, we all have different reasons how we start to write. But I had lost my father, who was a one-star brigadier general in the Army, and I took care of him with my family when he was dying. And I started realizing I never took the time to really know this great man. And when he died, I had miracles happen to me. And it takes me to Medjugorje in Bosnia, where apparitions are happening. So I put the book together. And then all of a sudden from there, I started out where I wanted to write about losing my husband, Richard, and my daughter, Lori, from their drinking. And last year, I put a narrative nonfiction together with 34 alcoholic and drug users, because I wanted to know, why is it some of them struggle and make it and others don't, like my family? And then I also found four other women, and we formed our group called Authors Without Borders, which is at AWB, the numeral number 6.com. And we do different services for the community. So that's how I got into the world of publishing, like I said. And I traveled from there becoming a speaker, and I go to private events at alcoholic rehabs, or I also talk in the public eyes.
Well, I guess you're a nightingale, sort of, in a sense, because you go around helping people, increasing the awareness about alcohol. In my family, we don't really have, well, I don't think we had alcohol, but alcoholics. But when it came in summertime and you had all these parties and barbecues, my uncle always made the kids go to the far end of the house, turn up the music, because he knew that alcohol would turn my relatives into something that we weren't accustomed to seeing. But
that's
I also
true.
Had a friend who both parents were alcoholics, and she said she was messed up, but her sister didn't act like nothing was going on. So I guess I want to ask you, can that be true? You can have kids in a family where maybe both parents or one parent is an alcoholic, and one is affected by it and the other isn't?
Yeah, so that's what happened in my family. I had two daughters, and they're 4 years apart. Debbie was the oldest, and Lori was the youngest. And I'd say Debbie was around four, and Lori was around two when my husband's drinking started to get out of hand. But what caused that, and it's hard to admit it, because I was young back then. I had never had alcoholism in my family, and I couldn't understand what was happening to us. But it's because, as the husband or the wife, we don't realize the enabling keeps it going. You know, somebody has to stop this, what we call the merry-go-round, and try something different. We got to get back into tough love like they talk with children. We got to do the same thing with an alcoholic. And we don't realize with tough love, we're actually showing love. But we're so afraid that the alcoholic is going to hate us or think that we don't care for them that we hold back from letting other people even know that we're having these problems. But Debbie, God bless her, she's fine. She has her drinks, but she doesn't get out of hand. Lori, in 2006, died at 39. We didn't even know she was an alcoholic till she was 37. Don't get me wrong, after I lost Richie in 1985, he was only 45. But what happened is I did what most people do. I'm ashamed to say it, where I just lost a husband from it. But when Lori was into her last year of high school, you know, I found out she missed school. I'd get calls from teachers. She took off with the kids. She was hanging out with kids that were drinking. And I'm thinking, well, it's just a stage. She's going to get through this. And when she met a guy and she got married and had two beautiful children, a son and daughter, never heard another word or a problem with anything with drinking until she was 37. So it goes to show how they can really hide it. And if they're doing that, you don't even know how to handle it. You don't even know there's a problem to handle. So you've actually got to see the progress of, hey, this isn't right. This kind of drinking is not right. And that's what happened to us. But I just, as a young girl, did not know how to handle it. And my biggest mistake to me was I never went for professional help. And I also didn't tell my family, because I thought if I didn't tell them, you know, they'd still think that Richie was a great guy, which he was when he didn't drink. So it's I think everybody can talk about different ways on they handle with the drinking in the family. But that's how it happened with me. I look back now, like we all say, how many of us say, oh, if I can only turn that clock back? Because I had to lose two people to really know the knowledge of what alcoholism can do to a person and the family.
Yes, the family is just like any other, I guess, chronic disease. Even if somebody gets cancer, the whole family has to go through with that person. You know, that person got the physical,
yes,
emotional stress, but the family also has the mental, because they have to rearrange their lives and, again, you know, hide it or whether to choose to tell everybody. And then, as you say, your daughter sort of became like a functional alcoholic. Like people become a functional diabetic, they hide it, they push it under the rug.
Oh, yeah.
What can a person do when you're trapped in the same household? Do you avoid it? Do you, you know, educate them? Do you get out and scream at them? Like, get your life together. What can a person do to avoid that same trap?
When I look back now, I would handle things a lot differently. I'm not saying anything I say on the air, Renee, is I'm not a counselor, I'm not a doctor. I'm only talking from my heart, losing two people. But you need a great education on it. And I think as soon as you see that there is something wrong, don't go around saying, oh, I wonder if it really is. If you've got these vibes, follow them. You know, you just can't keep going on with being blind, because even a family member, without realizing it, you go into denial just like the drinker. You know what I mean? You say, oh, I can handle this, so this won't be so bad. They'll get through with this. You've got to get honest with yourself just like the drinker has to. And you can't keep saying, oh, it'll pass by once they get through this stage, because it's not going to happen. And it's not that drinking may, would, or could kill. It will kill, and I learned that with losing two loved ones. But I would say the most important thing, if anybody's listening, and I mean this from the heart, stop doing all the talking. Listen to the person. I don't care if it's your child, your husband, your wife, your sister. Try and get time to talk alone with them. Find out why they're drinking. Find out what's bothering them. Let them do the talking. Ask them what do they need from you to support them. That's what I wish I could take back. I mean, I did a lot for my daughter when she was having this problem, but when somebody is really into heavy drinking and they can't stop, they don't know themselves why they're doing it. And if you can't get them professional help, and back then, Lori went to 3 alcoholic rehabs, 10 days. Renee, what is that really, 10 days? You've been drinking all these years, and all of a sudden now you're back out of the rehab, and you're facing the same situation. To me, they've got to do a lot more studying on why a person is drinking, more so than the disease. And myself, I can't picture anybody being in a rehab any less than 90 days to try to get to the problem of it. And you can't change your mind. Yeah, and you can't change your mind. I was great for this. If you do this one more time, Richie, I'm going to leave you. If you come home like this one more time, I'm going to divorce you. If you come home drinking one more time, I'm going to take the kids off you. And it's always, if you do this one more time, an alcoholic has to see that you mean what you say. You know, all you do is have it go in one ear and out the other for them, and you can't blame them. And meanwhile, what you're doing is you're not helping them. I mean, I had a small breakdown through all the years that I put myself through this. I'm not saying I'm to blame for my husband or daughter's drinking, but I'm to blame for not being a strong person to make demands. You know, you really have to come to a point to say, you know what, I'm not going to put up with this. Because I dragged poor Debbie and Lori at a young age, all the way up to till they were like 14, 16. And that's a lot of years that you put your kids through fear, confusion, listening to fighting, seeing your mother being abused. And that has to come from me, and it's not easy to admit this, but it's true, because you have to put your children first, and I didn't. I lived on the fear, well, they have to reach rock bottom. I didn't want anyone to know that they were drinking and there was a problem. And all we're doing is covering up the problem, and we're making it worse. I should have made rules and said either you definitely get help are you getting separated? But a lot of people panic if you separate because they look at it like, oh, I don't want, now that's going to lead to divorce. You don't have to divorce somebody. But there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm not bringing the family up like this, and we have to be the protectors of our children, and they should not be in any kind of atmosphere that's unhealthy like that.
So true. You said a lot. You said a lot. The person is an enabler, a denial, as well as the alcoholic. And so, therefore, I think a lot of times people, as you say, don't want to let it outside the house. We always know to keep your laundry inside the house. But they fear of if they can't help this person, then they are a failure themselves. That's the, you know, inside of them. If I can't help this person, then I'm failing him. And they're afraid that also the person will leave. So it's a lot like you're going through. It's a lot. So this journey is both for the alcoholic and non-alcoholic. So it does, you tell me, it does tear the family apart. You know, is this like one day, 2 days, or this happened 24/7? I mean, the abuse and everything you went through, I guess it was continuous all the time.
It will stay continuous if somebody doesn't do something. That's why my first book, I named it Someone Stopped the Merry-Go-Round. And I named it that because I did go to counseling for 2 months with my husband. It didn't help, but we both went. And that's how they explained it to me. They explain the drinking and the enabling like you're on a merry-go-round. And it keeps going around and around and around. And they said someone has to get off that merry-go-round to stop it. And the more that we just stay on it with them, your life doesn't change. But by then, the poor alcoholic is so deep into their addiction that they can't stop. A lot of kids in colleges, that's what breaks my heart. I'm sure a lot of them are saying, oh, I can stop anytime. Or, hey, all of us are doing it. I don't know why you're worrying about it. You know, but, you know, you're not going to stop. Because your body is going to get to a point where you're going to not be able to live on just, say, 5 beers a day. Now, in 2 months, you're going to need 10, because now maybe 20, 40 are drinking all day, because first you go through that next stage of panicking, having the nerves, and not thinking and realizing, I'm trying to get into an addict's mind, because don't forget, Renee, I'm not the alcoholic, but it's what I see. You know, they don't realize that they're getting all these symptoms because of their drinking. And the more they drink, the more symptoms they're getting. Instead of going for professional help and learning with medication and counseling how to go slowly each day. It's so true when they say take one day at a time, because that's what it is. Because it took my family a lot of years to get to the point where they couldn't stop. So it's going to take not just a lot of years to stop, because you're not. When you're an alcoholic, you're going to be an alcoholic to the day you die. You have to now learn how to live, who to stay away from, what to do to occupy your mind. You know, get a sponsor. Hang out with the people that really want to get sober themselves. But if you keep falling back to the crowd that's doing the same, you're never going to get over it.
Wow, and that's true, because you look at it, anybody that's in therapy, if they have some kind of challenging problem for 5 years, they say it takes 5 years plus to get them out of that. And like you said, with an alcoholic, it's for the rest of their lives. They have to be able to refuse. They have to, you know, move away from that addiction, from that thing that's causing them to slip into that pit. My thing is, why is one child experience all what the parent is going through, but the other one is just totally come out clueless? They're just fine. They become productive in society. And I had a friend, and her sister said, oh, I didn't see all that going on, and yet she experienced all that.
You know, that's really hard to tell, because I'm not a doctor. But I believe through all these years there are three reasons why a person is addicted. Number one, you will never convince me personally, and I'm not saying I'm right, but you will never convince me that it's not hereditary. When I look back at the members in my ex-husband's family, it was very high on the list with alcoholics. Not only my daughter died, I have his brother's family. All the kids were fighting, you know, with the battle of drinking. The second, I would say, reason is they like to follow the crowd. That's easy to use. Kids going to school, friends that are trying it. They start out when I went to one place to talk. It was a court-ordered program. And one man says to me, I don't know why I'm here. I'm only taking marijuana. I says, well, if it wasn't a problem, you wouldn't be here. Because that's how it starts. You're following the crowd. Oh, what harm is it? Pick up marijuana. From marijuana, it goes to heroin or whatever else. I can't even keep up with everything that they're on. But the third reason I believe people get addicted, and I think it should be number one, is there is a hidden mental problem with something that happened in the past. My daughter, 8 months before she died, and it's in my books, hinted that something happened with her father. Well, you could have knocked me over with a brick. Because even to this moment, I can't even tell you a moment where I thought they were ever alone. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Right.
And even with 3 stays in a rehab, Lori couldn't talk about it to counselors. Lori wouldn't allow any of us in the family to go to counseling. So instead of her as an alcoholic, and I wish if anybody has a drinking problem to hear this, you have got to take the trust and open up. I call it get the garbage out of you, because you have so much. Maybe somebody hurt you, whether it's physically or maybe they abused you or mentally they did a job on you. And Lori could not talk about it. And I have to live with this hurt of knowing my daughter suffered a lot more than I realized. And she became bulimic, and I didn't even realize it. When she lost weight, I thought it was the stress. She lost a good-paying job. She had a car repossessed. Her house was taken off. She and her 2 kids had to move in with my daughter. So I'm thinking this is why she's losing weight. But she just never would open up to us. And then she said the doctor told her if she didn't stop drinking in 2 years, her liver would shut down. I can't even find the words to tell you, loving your child, hearing this, knowing they won't let you go with them, because don't forget the Patient Privacy Act protects people 18 years old and over, whether they want you to come into their counseling or not. And, of course, they don't want you in there. They don't want you to bring up the stuff that bothers them. But what happens in my eyes, I know with my daughter, is it's shut her down from talking about what actually happened, because if you don't get out what's hurting you, the pain, you're not going to heal. And Lori was always afraid she was going to cry. Now, that may sound silly to somebody, but to her, she was probably, I'm only guessing because I don't know, she was probably afraid if she cried, she lost control of the emotion. And that's what she needed to do. And I was afraid to cry in front of her because I felt like I should have been strong, when meanwhile, if she saw me cry, she might have realized how much I loved her. And you have to let the person know when you're angry. You're not angry at them. You're angry at the disease. You love them, but you hate the disease because you can see it's killing them, and you don't know what to do to help them, because the only thing you can do is love and support them. They have to want it in their heart to get sober.
Mm.
So it's a.
This is really deep.
You know, I could talk hours on it because of losing two loved ones, but I know I'm pushing the book, but if anybody wants to learn something, my last book, because I wanted answers I couldn't get from Richie and Laurie. So these 34 alcoholics and what is and isn't working for the alcoholic and addict. That's the name of the book, and that's what the whole book is about. It's not only for alcoholics, it's for doctors, it's for counselors, it's for family members, because I sent them 23 questions to answer. And one of them was, what can family do to help you? What do you need from us? Because Laurie would never talk, and I wanted the book to help somebody else. And I figured out of 34 contributors, whether it was a family member or another alcoholic or a drug user, because they talk about both, alcohol and drugs, that somebody has to hit one story and say, you know what, that's me. That's our family life. Because I try to tell them when I go in rehab, the first thing I want you to do is hold your head up high. You have nothing to be ashamed of. You have an illness. You have a habit that you thought was fun that developed into something deeper than what you thought. The sadness is if you don't do anything about it. That's what the sadness is. Because really, I'm trying to give an example. When I talk to them, I say, now this may sound cruel. What if you're in a car accident? And God forbid you wake up and a doctor says to you, oh, I'm sorry, John, but you're never going to walk again. You're never going to feel anything from your waist down. Or you've been sick for 2 months, 6 months, and you go to the doctors and you have tests and they come back and say, I'm sorry, Mary, but you have cancer. You have a month to live. These people can't do anything about this. But somebody who is got an alcoholic problem or a drug problem, I try to tell them, you can do something about this. This is your battle. Because no matter how much parents yell, scream, beg, cry, threaten, whatever we do is not going to stop them from their actions. They have to want it. And I couldn't say that years ago. Because I carried so much guilt that as a parent, there had to be something I missed doing to save my family. And that book, What Is and What Isn't Working for the Alcoholic and Addict, gave me a lot of peace, but it also gave me a lot of tears. Because I realized that an alcoholic and a drug addict suffers more than even family realize. And that's what we have to learn. What is the alcoholic going through? You have to push your feelings and needs aside a little. Don't get me wrong, because you still need Al-Anon. You need to take care of yourself, too. But I'm saying, if that's why I get upset. I've been to AA, I've been to Al-Anon, and someone may not agree with me. But it's like everybody runs to these meetings, they close the doors, we all talk about what's bothering us, and then you leave, and now don't tell anybody what you talked about now. Remember now, keep this, you know, go on, live your life the best you can. Go on, you know, unless it gets too violent. But that's what's missing, Renee. We need to sit down as a family. What is it you want from me? This is what's bothering me, but you can't put the guilt onto an alcoholic because it only makes them go out wanting to do this even more. You've got to show, that's what I'm trying to say, you've got to show your love. Don't tell it. It's very easy for me to say, oh, Renee, I love you. But if you're hurting from something, an alcoholic, instead of just saying, I love you, go to AA meetings with them. Go to the doctor's appointments. Go to the counseling with them. Show them you love them and you want to support them. Don't just say it. And I think that would make a big difference. Can we save everybody? No, that's what's sad, because it still goes down to, and that's what it talks about in my book, from all the contributors, they all say, we have to want the help. And another thing, I'm going a mile a minute here with you, but I don't want to lose my train of thought. What I felt wonderful about with these contributors is they talked about their faith. And when I would go to counsel people, I even had in some men's rehab, one manager came up to me and said, don't talk about God, because they get confused. So I used myself, how I felt having God in my life. But when I got the answers from the contributors, a high percentage of them said when they turned back to their faith, it doesn't matter what your religion is, but when they turned back to their faith, they got the strength. That doesn't mean it works for everybody. That's why I have so many people telling their stories, because everybody is different.
Yes, and we got a few seconds. Just go ahead and give you a website. I'm going to have you come back on, because this is really important. This is really a journey. This is, wow, this is awesome. So if you can give everybody your website or your email address, how they can get a hold of you. I'll also put it in the, I believe I have it on your bio, but if you can give everybody
your
website.
Yes, I gave it to you, yes. Well, my website for writers is www.albertasequeira, that's S as in Sam, EQUEIRA.org. But my blog that I have is through WordPress for alcoholics, and that's it's called The Journey Through Alcohol Abuse, and that's www.albertasequeira.wordpress.com. And my email,
thank you very much. Okay,
you can
ahead,
put
sorry.
That on, yeah, you can put that on your site also, and they'll have my email.
Yes, thank you so much. It has been a blessing. I believe that God really, truly picked you, because you really are talking from the heart, not from the mind, from the heart, from faith, from love. Everything is all poured into you. So there was a reason why God chose you. It definitely is, and your books go along with it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. I'm going to have you back on. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Listen to Renee Wiggins of Blog Talk Radio, Fabulously Fit in God's Kingdom, next week for more fabulous tips on nutrition, fitness, and stress management.